Hey guys, welcome to episode 5 of the Where Do I Begin podcast. Actually hit a mini milestone. I can't believe we're on episode 5. But thank you to you guys for constantly supporting and for your positive feedback. It makes me so happy to know that you're finding it helpful and you're enjoying the conversations as well. If you're new here, I am your host Lola. I do hope you've all had a chance to listen to episode 4. It was a bit of a chilled conversation, but we did speak about a lot of important things. So if you haven't listened to episode 4, do check that out. One of the reasons why I do bring guests on the podcast is so they can share their expertise on topics that they are very much well acquainted with, but also to spice things up for you guys and keep the conversation interesting. So on today's episode, I do have some market news as per usual. So do make sure that you listen all the way through. But before we go any further, you all know the drill. We have a lot to get to, but first I have to read out this disclaimer. So here we go. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice, therefore any information discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy, and speak to a financial advisor. Please be aware that liability for any investment decisions made falls entirely on you. Any brands, companies, or investment platforms referenced during the duration of the podcast or future episodes are for educational purposes. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or advice given by guests solely represents the opinion of the guests and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So for today's episode, I've titled it As Long As the Outcome Is Income. And the reason for that is because I believe that for most people, that's their only strategy. That's as far as their strategy goes when it comes to investing. But there is a lot that goes into investing if you're trying to do it the right way and actually trying to build wealth that lasts for a long time, and you're thinking about legacy, you do need to look a bit deeper into the strategy that you're using. So without further ado, as we all know, I like to go back to the beginning. So for this episode, essentially we're going to be talking about investment strategies. So going back to the beginning means defining what an investment strategy actually is. So an investment strategy essentially is a set of rules, behaviors, or procedures, if you want to call it that, that sort of give you a guideline when you're constructing your portfolio or your stock picking. And those rules or the guidelines essentially have to be in line with what your investment objectives are, what your investment goals are. You also have to sort of take into account your risk appetite when you're deciding on what investment strategies you want to use or strategy you want to use when you're putting your investment portfolio together. So essentially, your investment strategy is like your game plan to building a portfolio. You know, for the guys that might be listening to this, like if you play any sports, you know, you can't just go into a football match without any game plan on how you want to win. You know, the same for women. If you're, you know, interested or you're an entrepreneur, you know, you have a project that you're working on, you know, you have to sort of think about how do I execute this project in a way that's going to be profitable for everybody that's involved. So the process of doing that and coming up with a plan or a strategy, it's the same when it comes to investing. So you need a strategy to build a portfolio that essentially will be profitable for you in the long term. Consequently, it's very important to find the right strategy or strategies that work for your objectives and what stage you're at in life, essentially. So thinking about that practically, a 25-year-old cannot have the same investment strategy as a 65-year-old. When you think about it, at 25, you can afford to take more risk and maybe put majority of your capital into the stock market. At 65, you can't afford to put majority of your money into the stock market, because at that point, you're thinking about retirement, you need a more stable income, you're thinking about leaving a legacy. So it would probably make better sense to invest in assets that are not as risky, as volatile. You know, things like bonds would probably make better sense, because 65 is not the age to start getting risque in terms of where you want to invest your money. The principle still applies, which is the fact that at different stages in life and at different ages, you sort of need to review where you're putting your money to sort of accommodate for where you're at and where you're looking to be. So moving on episode 2, I'll talk about portfolio construction, as I mentioned earlier, and different asset classes you should hold in that portfolio. Again, if you haven't listened to episode 2, please do. So for example, we spoke about things like dividend paying stocks and inflation linked bonds. Those two and some of the other asset classes that we spoke about all actually come under investment strategies. So I thought it was only right to basically just do an episode on the most common investment strategies, so that everyone sort of has a better understanding of how certain stocks you pick actually follow certain investment strategies, whether you're aware of it or not. And also just to make you aware that whenever you're going through your investment process of stock picking and building your portfolio, it's important to have a strategy in mind when you're doing that. So today I'm going to talk about the most common strategies. So I'll probably go through about 7 of those and then expand on one that I feel is the most important, especially now that the economy is starting to move towards its recovery phase, now that outside is open or opening up. So yeah, let's get into it essentially. So the first strategy I want to talk about is value investing. So value investing is basically an investment strategy that was made popular by one of the godfathers of investing, Warren Buffett. And essentially the principle behind it is to buy stocks that are cheaper than they should be, basically stocks that are cheaper than what the market average is. Okay, so to find the stocks, it does take a lot of research and you know, you're looking at the fundamentals of the companies that you're looking to purchase. Again, I spoke about fundamentals in previous episodes, but essentially these are things like looking beyond what the company is earning. So this is also looking at things like what their attitude towards environmental social governance is, for example, what their corporate structure or their business model, you know, looks like, and if they have a potential for long-term growth. Those are all the core principles of value investing. Value investing also requires you to buy and hold the stock for a number of years. So you can't be holding value stocks essentially for 2 years and think you're going to, you know, make a decent return. The reason being is that they're quite cyclical in nature. So what that means is that they move essentially to the beat of the economy. So when the economy is performing well, value stocks are also performing well. And when the economy is doing badly, value stocks tend to, you know, do badly as well. So that's why I said we're going to talk about the one strategy that is really important as the economy moves into its recovery phase. So that's value investing. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So we're going to go to the second investment strategy, which is income investing. Income investing is a great way to build wealth over time. It essentially involves buying securities or stocks that generally pay out returns on a steady schedule. Also include dividend paying stocks, ETFs, mutual funds, and real estate investment trusts. Again, I spoke about all these different asset classes in, I think, episode 2, so please do check that out. Fixed income particularly does provide a reliable income stream with minimal risk. So they're probably the least risky asset class, which is why I had mentioned them earlier on when we were talking about, what the investment strategy of a 25-year-old should look like compared to that of a 65-year-old. So that's income investing. The next investment strategy I wanted to talk about was growth investing. This is an investment strategy that essentially focuses on capital appreciation. So growth investors tend to look for companies that show signs of above average market growth through revenues and profits. Even if the share price appears expensive in terms of, metrics such as PE ratio. So the way to tell if something is expensive or if a stock price is expensive, is if the PE ratio is higher or significantly higher than what the industry average is. Again, a PE ratio, simply put, which I spoke about in a previous episode, is one of the quickest ways to basically value a stock. So normally, as a rule of thumb, people will say theoretically that any stock that has a PE ratio less than 10 is potentially a value stock. And any stock that has a PE ratio greater than 10 is potentially a growth stock. Now, that's theoretically a rule of thumb, but as I mentioned in last week's episode, when it comes to using valuation metrics, you can't just use them in isolation. So even though you have 10 as a number, which is a rule of thumb, you actually also have to sort of research what the industry average is for that particular stock that you're looking to buy. So let's say you're trying to buy a stock in the tech industry, you need to Google what the PE ratio is, what the average PE ratio is for the tech industry, and then compare that to the PE ratio of the particular stock that you're looking to invest in. So you have to use the industry average basically as the benchmark to decide if this is potentially a growth stock or a value stock. So hope that makes sense. And a lot of times as well with growth stocks, they tend to perform well regardless of what the economy is doing. So it doesn't matter if the economy is down or up, they tend to perform well throughout. And with growth stocks, you tend to make your money on them when you basically sell the stock. So when the stock has reached its peak, and then you sell it, that's when you make majority of your money, because growth stocks don't basically pay dividends. Or alternatively, you can just leave it to keep growing and keep growing, and then whenever you need to withdraw the funds, then you essentially sell it. So the next strategy that I want to talk about is one that's very I guess well known, and it's also always recommended, especially if you're new to investing, and that's passive investing. So passive investing is basically index investing. So basically investing in an index, where you're essentially purchasing a representative benchmark. So investing in the S&P 500, for example, is a form of passive investing, and your aim is to maximize your return by minimizing how often essentially you're buying or selling. So if you're investing in an index, you're not really buying or selling the way traders would. So you're essentially buying a group of companies all at the same time, spreading your risk, and then just holding it. And the reason why passive investing or index investing is quite beneficial is because historically, they've actually been proven to do really well. Over time, especially when you compare it to active investments, which I'm going to talk about next. If you're not sure what the S&P 500 index sort of represents, it's basically a stock market index that measures how the stock market is doing overall, particularly in the US. So it includes 500 of the largest US companies across 11 sectors. So on the S&P 500 index is where you find companies like Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Tesla, JP Morgan, Alphabet, which is the parent company to Google, and also Berkshire Hathaway, of which Warren Buffett is the CEO. as well as Johnson and Johnson. Although Johnson and Johnson is currently going through a controversial moment with their vaccines, I'm sure they will recover in due time. So the next strategy I wanted to talk about was active investing. So we're number five now. Active investing as a strategy basically requires a more hands-on approach. Usually, this is either done by a portfolio manager, or if you're into DIY portfolios where you want to manage your investment yourself, then essentially you could potentially be an active investor because you're making decisions on what to buy, sell, or hold based on what's going on in the market. And the aim of active investing is to try and beat the benchmark. So you're trying to beat the indexes that have been historically proven to return. I think usually most index return between 8 to 10%. Annually, I might be getting that wrong, but I think they tend to return that much, and depending on how well the economy is doing. So active investing have become more popular over recent years. For some people that are supportive of passive investing will tell you that there's no evidence to basically show that active investment essentially performs better than passive investments. And that's true to some extent, because for you to be an active investor, you really need to essentially know what you're doing, and you need to be able to take advantage of short-term price fluctuations. So I guess this is where traders come in, those that trade regularly. So it does involve you having a much deeper analysis and expertise when it comes to deciding if you want to buy a stock, hold it, sell it, all that good stuff. It requires a lot of confidence if you're trying to beat the benchmark that has been historically proven to return between 8 to 10%. And it essentially also relies on you knowing when the right time is to buy, to sell, or to hold a stock or an asset. I have spoken about the dangers of always trying to time the market, because I don't believe you can always time the market perfectly, only because I do partly believe in the random walk theory, which I spoke about again in a previous episode. So do you have a listen to that when you get a chance? So ultimately, for you to consider yourself an active investor, or for you to say that your active investment strategy is successful, it requires you to be right more often than being wrong. And unfortunately, so far, there aren't a lot of active investors out there that can really say that they have been able to outperform the market index consistently. So that's just something to sort of keep in mind as well. The next strategy I wanted to talk about is the absolute return strategy. So this investment strategy includes short selling futures, options, derivatives, all that good stuff, particularly with what people would call unconventional assets. So unconventional assets are basically assets that are not traditional assets. So traditional assets would be stocks, bonds, and cash. Anything outside that would be considered unconventional. So things like derivatives. So absolute return investments essentially aim to achieve returns over the short term, and generally include more risk. So the objective of an absolute return fund is to deliver positive returns in any market condition. Short selling, I just wanted to pick on that because we saw an example of that recently with the issue of GameStop, is basically when an investor borrows a stock, sells the stock, then buy the stock back to return it to the lender. Essentially, short sellers are betting that the stock they sell will drop in price. That was what was going on with the case of GameStop, hence the whole drama about the stock. But yeah, moving on to the next strategy, and the final one, which is actually number seven, is something called the core satellite strategy. So the core satellite approach or strategy basically refers to low cost ETF, so low cost exchange traded funds, and that will give you diversified exposure to stock and bond markets. And essentially, it should help you outperform, the broader market as a whole. That's the whole aim of doing a core satellite approach. So, with the core satellite approach, you're basically doing a bit of passive and active investing. So there's some assets that, you're using the passive investment strategy, and then there's some assets in the portfolio where you're using the active investment strategy or investing strategy. So it's basically the best of both worlds that you're getting when you're talking about core satellite as an investment strategy. And combining those two basically would essentially protect you from dangerous levels of risk, whilst also setting you up for some potentially big gains. Okay, so those are the seven most common investment strategies, and the strategies you should be aware of when you're thinking of constructing your portfolio. That we've covered the most common strategies. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to really spend some time now on one that I feel is most important, which is value investing, because it's cyclical in nature. And now that everybody is talking about, the economy opening up again, if you currently don't hold any value stocks, and you're looking to sort of expand your portfolio or rebalance your portfolio, then value stocks essentially would be the way to go in terms of stocks that you may want to look into buying at the moment. Value stocks generally have a few characteristics that are specific to them outside of their PE ratio being less than 10. So when you're trying to look for a value stock, you need to be looking for these characteristics to sort of decide if this is a value stock or a growth stock. So value stocks typically are mature businesses, so businesses that have been about for a long time. They're sort of steady in their growth rates. So it's not like Tesla that, maybe in 2010 the stock price is less than, I don't know, $100, and now we're moving towards $700, $800. Do you get what I mean? So the growth rates for them tend to be steady in terms of how they're growing. It's not an exponential growth rate, basically, it's a steady growth rate. In terms of their earnings and revenues, they tend to be relatively stable as well. Most value stocks also pay dividends, so that's another key characteristic of value stocks. And as I mentioned, in some industry, the rule of thumb of the PE ratio being less than 10 is a good indication. But again, you always have to essentially check the industry average. Now, when it comes to value investing, I think it's quite synonymous with quality investing to some extent. I know some will probably disagree. I do believe with quality investing, when we talk about what quality investing means, I believe it does have some expression in some of the core principles of what value investing represents. Because it involves buying companies, outstanding companies, to be more specific, at a fair price, rather than just buying stocks because they look cheap. There are lots of cheap stocks out there that are not quality investments or that are not value stocks. So that's why you can't just sort of make a decision that a stock is a value stock because, it's cheaper than what the market average is. Essentially, a quality focused investor typically screens out many companies, perhaps even the majority of the market, on the basis of bad business models, low profitability, poor corporate governance before even considering valuations. So before even considering the PE ratio, you're looking at, the shareholders' reports, as I mentioned in previous episodes, and you're looking at their earnings, how much profit are they making? How consistently do they make this profit? What's their business model like? Has that been beneficial to the growth of the company? Have they had, a lot of scandals? Do they have poor corporate governance? Those are the things you're even looking at before you consider, using valuation metrics such as like the PE ratio to value, what the fair price is for the stock, or how much a stock is basically worth. Legendary value investor Benjamin Graham, another godfather who we've spoken about previously, cautioned that the greatest losses come from not paying too much for good companies, or from buying bad firms that seemed cheap because they were flattered by favorable business conditions. And this point is very important because it was one of the reasons why I was extremely worried when everybody was rushing to, buy GameStop, and people were sort of giving advice on the timeline that, GameStop is the next big thing. And for me, that was misinformation, mainly because, essentially you're trying to compete with hedge funds that can afford to lose millions. Retail investors cannot afford to lose that much money, and GameStop was a company that was already failing. So by the hedge funds, short selling it, was their way of essentially trying to, help the business and pack it up nicely, if you get what I mean. So sometimes it's not about, the companies that you pay so much for. Sometimes the way you lose money, is also investing in companies that, seem cheap, seem affordable to invest in, but at their core, they're not good quality investments because they have poor corporate governance, they're not making any profit, they have a terrible business model, but you've chosen to, buy into the stock because of the fear of missing out, essentially. So now I'm just gonna, I guess, potentially highlight some of the good value stocks to buy right now. There's Berkshire Hathaway, of which Warren Buffett is the CEO, and essentially it's a conglomerate of more than 60 wholly owned businesses, and it has a massive stock portfolio of more than four dozen different positions. They have steadily increased their value and earnings over time. And it currently operates under the same business model that has led the stock to more than double the annualized return of the S&P 500 index for over 55 years. So if you're looking for a value stock to potentially buy into, Berkshire Hathaway is definitely the way to go. Another one to look at is Procter and Gamble. I'm sure this one is much more well known. They're essentially a consumer product manufacturer. They're the company behind brands such as Gillette, Tide, Downy, Crest, Febreze, Bounty, but there are loads more, lots of more different types of brands basically in their portfolio. Through the success of its many brands, Procter and Gamble has been able to steadily add to its revenue over time, and it's become one of the most reliable dividend stocks in the market, increasing its payout annually for more than 60 consecutive years. So, if you're looking for, I guess, a dividend paying stock, that's also a value stock. or should I say that potentially we use the value investing strategy, then Procter and Gamble is another one to buy. The third one is currently controversial, and that's Johnson and Johnson. The healthcare giant is best known for its consumer healthcare products such as the Band-Aid, Tylenol, Neutrogena, Listerine, and Benadryl, among a few. The majority of its revenue does come from its pharmaceutical arm and medical device businesses. Healthcare is usually one of the most recession-resistant businesses in the economy, and Johnson & Johnson has produced steady revenue and dividend growth over time. As we've seen with what happened with the pandemic, the healthcare industry has been booming. So, like I spoke about in the first episode about when you're stock picking in terms of strategies, sometimes it's good to use the top-down approach, where you're looking at what's going on in the economy at large, then what's going on in specific industries, then what's going on in specific sectors. Do you narrow it down to the company that you want to choose to invest in? So Johnson and Johnson is a good example of that. And their pharmaceutical arm, as I mentioned earlier, has been quite successful, and that's where majority of their revenues have come from. The reason I say they've been quite controversial recently is, if anyone has been following the news, it was said that one of the side effects of the COVID vaccine that they've produced actually is essentially leading to blood clots for some of those that have taken the vaccine. So I think at the moment the vaccine is currently under review and has been put on hold. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I know it's been, sort of put on hold. I think they probably will survive this, because I don't think it's a large majority that has sort of suffered from blood clots as a side effect of the Johnson and Johnson COVID vaccine. But again, guys, like, do your own research before you decide to sort of buy into it. I don't imagine that the Johnson and Johnson stock will be affected too severely, only because I don't think the COVID vaccine that they're producing, I don't think it's one that they were looking to make profit from anyway. So in terms of all the other brands that they currently hold and that they're in charge of, I think that should act as a good buffer in terms of how well the company is gonna do, moving forward, essentially. So now let's move on to, I guess, another set of stocks that it will be good to be aware of now that the economy is potentially picking up. And these are emerging market stocks, so they're also known as EM stocks. Essentially, they tend to be presented as funds most of the time. So emerging market funds offer investors access to countries and regions that are undergoing economic transition. Some people may want to look at it as a way to give back to emerging nations or developing countries in some cases. And whilst there are many ways to define emerging markets, the term typically refers to two dozen countries, which is basically 24 countries, that are part of the MSCI Emerging Market Index. So we're talking countries like Latin America, China, and India. And why is it a good idea to maybe add emerging market stocks to your portfolio? The first reason is because they're highly cyclical. So same as value stocks, when the economy is doing well, they're doing well. So they move to the beat of the economy, and when the economy is doing terribly, they also tend to do terribly. So that's the first reason. Another reason is that a lot of emerging economies tend to rely on certain raw materials, from which they should benefit from the rising price or the climbing price of commodities at the moment. Potentially investing in emerging market stocks now that the economy is potentially picking up, it's a good idea. So in terms of, I guess, which regions to look at, you can look at India, and you can also look at stocks in the energy, sorry, in the Asia region, in the energy and insurance sector. So those are in some emerging market stocks one can look at. So let's talk about what the benefits are of investing in emerging market stocks. They offer quite a few benefits, with diversification being one of them, and also the opportunity to access growing economies and undervalued securities. So the good thing about emerging economies is that you're most likely going to find a lot of value stocks in emerging markets because they're undergoing economic transition from being emerging economies to potentially developed economies. So that's where you find a lot of value stocks. So that's the reason why I spent a little bit of time earlier on sort of going in a bit deeper on value stock and value investing as a strategy. So the good thing about diversification and the benefits it provides as a result of investing in emerging market stocks is that it helps reduce your overall volatility, the overall volatility in your portfolio. And it also helps you take this diversification benefit a bit further by investing in markets that don't move in sync with each other. So if you're investing in emerging markets, essentially they're not moving in the same direction as, let's say, developed markets like the US or the UK, for example. So if the UK or the US are doing terribly, that doesn't affect how well or how badly emerging markets could be doing potentially. So if they don't move in sync, that means if the US or the UK is doing badly, emerging market stocks are probably doing quite well. They're not correlated at all. Another benefit is the opportunity it presents. So investing in emerging market stocks or funds gives you basically the potential to improve your portfolio's overall long-term returns. And interesting fact actually is, according to the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, emerging markets and developing economies recently accounted for nearly 80% of global economic growth. And that share is actually increasing as infrastructure in this economy improves and demand for goods and services from this region increases. So if you're also looking for value stocks to invest in outside of, I guess, the US or the UK, looking at emerging market stocks would definitely be a good way to go, especially if they're accounting for 80% of global economic growth. There will be stocks to get in early. There'll be stocks that will be good to get in early before they become like super expensive. The other key benefit of emerging market stocks is valuation. So companies in developed markets have already factored valuation into the price of their stock. It's already been factored in automatically, whereas a lot of companies in emerging markets, the valuation of their companies is often not factored in. So what that means is that it creates potential for either active fund managers or portfolio managers, or if you're an active investor yourself, to sort of identify stocks that are trading at an inexpensive valuation relative to the growth outlooks. Essentially, you're purchasing the stock at a bargain. That's what that means. So, because a lot of times when a company has been valued and that's become public information, it makes it difficult for you to buy at a price that you may personally feel is the fair price for it, especially if the price is less than what the stock price is currently, if you feel that the price is less than what the stock price is currently showing. Whereas when it comes to emerging market stocks, because they don't have that whole valuation thing attached to them, because they're sort of going through an economic transition, it means essentially you can purchase stocks at a discount as opposed to a premium. But just like with everything, there are benefits and there are also risks. So what are some of the risks of emerging market stocks that you need to be aware of? They tend to be prone to more volatility than the funds or stocks in developed countries. The markets tend to be much smaller and also much more vulnerable to political shifts. Commodity price swings Shocks and changes in monetary policy are also some of the major risks that could affect your returns if you do decide to invest in emerging market stocks or funds. And I guess the final risk I'll talk about is the fact that the stocks or funds of emerging markets tend to also carry currency risk. So basically, the value of their holdings vary not just by the increase or decrease in, security prices or commodity prices, but also by the value of their currencies relative to the dollar. So before you do decide to invest in emerging market stocks, it is important to sort of weigh the pros and cons. And then think about what else you have in your portfolio that could essentially hedge against the currency risk and all the other risks that I mentioned earlier before you go ahead essentially. So I wouldn't say you should let the risk stop you, but I think you should let the risk definitely guide you as to how much money or how much money you want to essentially put into emerging market stocks or funds. So if you are looking for potential emerging market stocks to invest in, and again, you've not been aware of emerging market stocks, the MSCI index is a good place to start. It is maintained by MSCI, which is formerly known as Morgan Stanley Capital International, and it is used as the common benchmark for world or global stock funds intended to represent a broad section of global markets. So yeah, do check out the MSCI index if you're looking to invest in some emerging market stocks, just to see what's out there and view their stock profile and their risk profile, and also to essentially make a well-informed decision. So I did promise I was going to keep this podcast to about an hour today, and I think we're on schedule. So I'm gonna start wrapping up now. So in terms of market news and upcoming stocks, I guess of long-term growth potential that you may want to research or have a look at. These are stocks that I personally found interesting. So I thought I'll bring that to you guys, and then you guys can do more research if these are areas that you're interested in investing in, basically. So the first area, drone industry, a company called Parallel Flight. So essentially, what they're looking to do is to provide innovative emergency technology to cater for I guess the populations, especially when populations in areas where they experience natural disasters. So what they do is they have an unmanned aircraft that can carry heavy loads for over 2 hours, which is 10 times what is currently available. And that's the technology that they've essentially developed to help when there are natural disasters. So it'd be a quick way to basically get help to those in need. In I guess natural disaster prone areas. So it has been named as one of the fastest growing industries. So it's definitely something to consider if you're interested in that industry. The name of the company again is called Parallel Flight. And the next industry is the hydrogen industry. As we all know, there's always a lot of talk about climate change and sustainable future essentially, and moving towards renewable fuels and all that good stuff. The good thing about hydrogen is that the gas can be used to generate electricity, manufacture chemicals, materials, fuel cars, and so much more without producing any negative emissions or contributing to your carbon print. So investing in the hydrogen market basically is something you may want to look at. You may also want to research hydrogen-related energy projects that may be going on at the moment and invest in those stocks. You could also invest in the stocks of companies, I guess, that produce the hydrogen gas, or those that manufacture electrolyzers and fuel cells, or those car makers essentially that are into the EV space, electric vehicles space, that use hydrogen as a way to sort of power the electric cars. So that brings us essentially to the end of the episode. Those are the two industries you may want to look at, drones and the hydrogen market, basically. So thank you again for listening. Do share, follow, comment, subscribe. As usual, if you have any questions about anything said in this episode or future episodes, do send a DM on Instagram, or you can send me an email at info.wheredoibeginpod@gmail.com. The Instagram page is wheredoibegin_pod on Instagram. So feel free to, yeah, either send in questions about any of the episodes or just any questions you may have generally in relating to investing or the industry. The DMs are definitely open for that. In terms of upcoming topics, there is going to be a crypto topic, but I'm really saving that because I'm a bit on the fence about crypto at the moment. So I definitely want to make sure I come in correctly to basically come and talk to you guys about crypto. It's not an area that I have too much knowledge in, so I will look to get a crypto expert on the show as well, or on the podcast. Just so you sort of get a balanced argument. I'm not sure when that's going to be, but it's coming up. So do stay tuned in and make sure you're following the Instagram page as well, so you guys know when that's going to drop. But yeah, next week I will be bringing on the special guest as promised. But I needed to talk about investing strategies this episode, because there's a lot going on in the market now that outside is open, and there's going to be a lot more going on in the market. So I wanted to make sure everyone was well equipped when it comes to stock picking and constructing their portfolios, if you're into DIY portfolios, so that you have the right strategies to basically make the right investment decisions. So hope you've all enjoyed it, and I will talk to you guys soon on the next episode.